This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
It is hour two rolling along this morning. Glad you can be with us here on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio Network. And once again, our thanks to 1580 The Fanatic in Phoenix for having us on this morning. And our thanks to CEO and President Ron Cohen for his efforts to put this show on in the Valley of the Sun. Thank you very much for being part of what we're doing.
Not only great first name.
That's right, of course. But he spells it with one N.
He does spell it with one N. We'll work on that with him. Right. But the other thing I love, awesome initials.
Yeah, that's right. Very nice.
I'm
very
a fan.
Good. You're a fan. RC. RC1 and RC2. Well done. Yeah, so thanks, Ron Cohen, and again, 1580 The Fanatic out in Phoenix for having us on this morning. We are very, very excited about that. So again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. So we've been talking a lot this morning about the NBA playoffs and, of course, the NFL draft that is coming up this week on Thursday night in Kansas City. One other site that I saw this weekend, that warmed my heart despite the cold temperatures was how many people went to the Colorado Spring Game out in Boulder this weekend. Now, many of you know Deion Sanders is the new head coach at Colorado. I spent 10 years in Denver. Some part of the 10 years, not all of it, some part was spent covering the Colorado Buffaloes. I spent the last two seasons basically covering Colorado for the ticket, my last stop before I moved to Nashville in 2012. And I got very close to the program over the 10 years that I was in Colorado. And I'll be honest with you, Colorado football wasn't really anything. Yeah, really, really nothing much. But when you cover sports teams for a living, you hear this a lot when journalists will say, look, you don't necessarily become a fan of the team like a fan that buys season tickets, but you do become a fan of the people who really work hard for the team and you want some success. They're nice to you. They take care of you. You know, they get you tickets when you need it for some business thing. They help you with any information that you're looking for, interviews that you may need, and you become fans of the people who invest their entire professional lives into the program. And that happened with me with Colorado. I'm very, very close to some people that are still with the program, even though I haven't been in Colorado in a decade. Dave Platty, the longtime SID, is a legendary sports. He was the guy that created the term red zone. If you hear red zone, Dave Platty at Colorado was
any
the
royalties?
Guy that invented that term. He never got royalties. Mm. He never trademarked the phrase. He just put it in notes, and it just caught on. He put it in notes. He came up with the statistic, which was the percentage of scoring opportunities inside from the 20-yard line in, called it the red zone. And people just went with it, and it took off from there. He never capitalized on it financially. At least I don't think so. He's kind of said he didn't. But who knows? Maybe secretly he did. Who knows? But he's been there since he was a student. He was a student in the 70s and he graduated and went right to the sports information office as a young, you know, whatever they do, right out of the gate. And then eventually he became the SID. He's been in the SID forever. He is the Colorado Buffalo historian. But nevertheless, outside of that, I've been to many spring games in Colorado where nobody was there and nobody cared. I've been to many games in the regular season where nobody was there and nobody cared. And this was kind of unique for me because when I was younger, I remember a very popular television show. I was on TV on ABC back when I was a kid growing up, Mork and Mindy. Remember Mork and Mindy? It was based out of Boulder.
Yep.
And you remember the one scene where they were in Folsom Field and Robin Williams was on the goalpost? It was kind of in the opening credits, right? When I was there the first time, I went, Mork and Mindy, look at this. First time I ever went to Folsom Field. It's one of the most beautiful settings in the world for a game. It's just gorgeous. But the team has been lousy for a long time, not since Joel Klatt was the quarterback there. But nevertheless, Deion Sanders has arrived. And Deion Sanders has made it the place to be because that's what Deion Sanders does. And there were 47,000 people that showed up in the cold weather. There was snow. It was 30 degrees. Everyone was bundled up in jackets because that's what the weather could be like in Boulder. And they were all there to watch the team do things on the field led by Deion Sanders. Make no mistake about it that the main draw was Deion Sanders and the enthusiasm that he's putting into the program. Oh, you could say Travis Hunter, the wide receiver slash corner, the five-star player that he brought with him from Jackson State. People may have wanted to see him, but they were there to see Coach Prime. They were there to support Deion Sanders and this hire that Colorado pulled off. Now, perception is everything, and that's what I love about college football, because the Deion Sanders is selling Deion Sanders all the time. And in college sports, you have to do that. It's kind of a wild job, because you're coaching young men to be the best college players they could possibly be, and you're teaching them the ins and outs of the game, and you're trying to instill some discipline into the young men that you're guiding. But you know what you're also doing? Selling. Selling, selling, selling. You're always selling your program. You're selling it to recruits, but you're selling it whenever a TV camera is on. And nobody does that better than Deion Sanders. He's got not only the people in Colorado excited about this program, he wants to create an atmosphere that makes it attractive in the new world of the transfer portal. He told the players on day one when he arrived, and he had all the players that were currently on the roster, had them all in the room, and what did he say to them? He said, "I'm bringing my luggage with me, and it's Louie." And he was trying to tell them, like, you guys, if you don't step up, I'm going to be replacing you with really good football players. And that's what he's selling. He's selling an idea that players that are out there, if you come to Colorado, you're not alone. So if you're a five-star recruit and you're being wooed by Georgia and Michigan and Ohio State and Texas or anybody, you come to Colorado. I know it's crazy. Come here. We haven't won in over close to 20 years. Come here. You come here. You're not alone. There's a couple of other five-star recruits that are here. There's a couple of the four-star recruits that are coming here. That's the perception. That's the game, right? Colorado is now in a Pac-12 that's not going to have USC and UCLA in it in the next couple of years. They're in a Pac-12 that's sort of kind of a mess. Yep, Oregon is still going to be good. You can get a headache from Washington and some other places. But they're in a conference where they can win. It's going to take a while. It's not going to happen in year one. And I'm worried about that. I'll be honest with you. I'm worried about that. He's bringing in a lot of talent. But it may take a year to really kind of get your feet wet, kind of get your things going. And I wonder if they don't start off strong, are people going to say the Deion Sanders experiment didn't work? Are they going to say, ah, well, he's all hype. He's all mouth. He's all promise. But they went 7-5 their first year. I'm not looking at Colorado to be a national championship team. That's insane. They went 1-11 last season. You're bringing in a whole bunch of new players and mixing them in a stew. Your goal is to get some promise, and then you build on year two or three. That's why people are saying, making the prediction, some are making the prediction, that you could see Colorado in the national championship playoff, in the expanded playoff, not this four-team playoff, within a five-year window. They're not looking at it at year one or two, but I wonder how many people are ready with the knives, the throwing knives, to fling at Deion Sanders, because his act it's warming to people, but it's also they can see some sort of showmanship in it,
right,
that they don't like added to their
the circus.
They can see the circus, right?
Yeah.
Like, they can see the Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey top hat, right? They can see the ringmaster. Like, he's always speaking in prose, and he's in sort of this very colorful, sort of poetic language that's attractive to hear, but does it carry substance, right? I'm looking forward to it because, again, I got a little attachment to the program. But beyond that, if he was hired at any place that was struggling, I'm curious to see it. I'm curious to see what he does on the upper level. I love everything that he talks about when he says, like, you're going to open doors for people. You're going to wear suits. You're going to wear your gear. You're going to be polite. You're going to show up to class. If I find out you're not in class, you're not on this team. Like, things like that. Like, when he talks about we're going to be disciplined. We are not going to be in the headlines for anything other than football around here. And if you're in the headlines for anything other than football, you're out. Now, some people may disagree with that approach, right? Remember Nick Saban famously mm-hmm. gave a speech where he pointed to an individual that he could have kicked off his Michigan State team a while, way, way, way back in the day. But that guy went on to be in the NFL. And that guy went on to start a business. And that guy became very wealthy and sent his daughter to Princeton, those kind of things. That you don't just give up on a kid for one mistake. Deion Sanders is a different approach. And if he sticks by it, right, we'll see. Like, if Travis Hunter is late for a meeting, we'll see if he plays in week 3 against whoever. Like, we'll see. maybe rules for some, maybe rules for others. I don't know. But it was neat to see. It was really neat to see the people enthusiastic supporting for Deion Sanders. And I think if you're Deion Sanders, you really have to look around and understand where you're at. You are at this very unique program that one time shared a national championship. I think it was with Georgia Tech that year, one year, or like 90, 91.
Right. Cordell Stewart, right?
Cordell Stewart. I forgot who the quarterback was, but it was, goodness gracious. I remember the player that made a big play in the, I think it was the Orange Bowl. But they won a championship. They shared a national championship. And right or wrong, they have this expectation of being somewhat decent at it. Like not great. They're not Alabama. They know they're not Alabama. But they're not 1-11 either. They're a state school. It's a beautiful place to play. They've upgraded the facilities. They've had good players. They've had a Heisman Trophy winner. Like there's a feeling like we should be way better than what we are. And there's a lot of people there who have been with the program for decades and decades and decades. And Deion Sanders has to know that a 47,000 people that show up for a spring game, they're not there just to see you and get a look at you. They're there because they are now telling you they're buying what you're selling. They bought into this. They're all on board the primetime Coach Prime train. And then in the autumn, we want to see this team go from something of a embarrassment to something respectable and then move from that point forward. And I hope he doesn't take them for a ride and then decide bye-bye as he heads to some other greener pasture.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's time for the good, the bad, and the dumb. If you're a first-time listener, now that we are on in Phoenix, this is where Ron gives us good news, bad news, and dumb news. It could be from anything. It could be from politics, or it could be from pop culture. It could be from sports. It could be from anything. But we do promise good, bad, and the dumb. So what is the good of the day?
There is only one good of the day, Tony, and it's 15 years in the making.
This is, I know what you're going to talk about.
Final seconds of the race course. All eyes on the referee. Champions! Wrexham are promoted. They have their storybook ending.
All right, so I have a question about this.
Yes.
Where are they promoted to now?
So now they're promoted to the English Division 2, like Championship 2 or just...
So can you equate that to anything that we have in America?
Yeah.
So is this going ball to single A?
The easiest way, yeah. The easiest way, it's like where they were before was almost almost the independent league.
Right.
Where... You know, like some players got paid, some didn't. You know, it was really hard times. They were one of the teams that got paid a lot. But they moved up to, I would say, double A.
Double A, okay. So that's very good.
Yeah, so it's like as if they moved up to double A. Next step for them is the first division, right, to get promoted into that. Then it's the Champions Division, and then it's the major leagues.
Okay, so then that's Premier League.
Yeah.
How far away are they from the Premier League right now?
Three steps.
Three more steps.
Yeah.
Is that something that can happen in 3 years, or does it like you got to do a couple years here, a couple years here, a couple years here?
Well, it all depends on how big of a pocketbook Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney have.
Right.
Because, I mean, you can definitely make the jump if you go out and buy all the right players.
Sure.
But the problem is you got to get those players to want to play for
them. Have they done that here?
They did go out and pick up some really good players, some old talent, by the way, too. Like their goalkeeper, Ben Foster, used to be a Premier League goalie.
Okay.
I think he was an alternate on England's national team, but he's 40 years old. And gotcha. He's good for this team. Moving forward, he may not be good in the second division.
So
they
I
are
going
to have to go and reshop.
I got another question.
Yeah.
You put it in the good, and the first thing you said out of the gate was, there's only one good.
There is only one good.
Is it only good because Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds own this team?
Has there been
any other story like this that we in America have ignored because we're not as attached to English soccer? Hold on, let me finish.
Okay.
not attached to English Chicago, but because we have this relationship with these two actors who put a documentary together, that's why it's a feel-good story and is on every sports website this morning.
Exactly. It's definitely that. It's definitely the fact that, yeah, there's a documentary. Yes, we do have a special attachment because we do know these guys.
Right.
And
right.
We're seeing the inner workings. You know, I mean, Welcome to Wrexham is a great documentary. There will be a Welcome to Wrexham season 2. That are probably highlight. I mean, they definitely have to do it now. That'll highlight this whole transition into getting them out there. I mean, it's really remarkable that these guys bought this team a year ago. I'm trying to figure it out because I think everything's delayed. So maybe 2 years ago they bought the team. They had that first season that we all watched with Welcome to Wrexham, where they just missed out. And this is the season where they do it. So I mean, they really turned around this club fast.
All right.
Now we do. Teams get promoted, teams get relegated all the time. And it's always a feel good for that fan base, but we're not in tune with them because we don't watch it.
Sure, sure.
You know, but it would be like a single A team or a double A team getting promoted to the next level. And that's, you know, it would be a feel good area for that market.
So let me transfer it to something. Let's say we had we don't have regulation and deregulation, so it's very hard to equate this to.
Yeah, that's why I choose baseball, because we do see that there's a tier. There's a tier level in baseball.
So if I'm an English fan in their current league, or what was their current league, outside of the fact that they're a team in my league and they're getting promoted and I'm not, do they look at Wrexham and go, well, yeah, you bought every player, and you have two very wealthy people running it, and we don't.
Probably.
Do they see it the way we would see it?
Listen, we
if
see
there it. Was an owner that came in and said, I'm buying everybody, so how about that, everybody? I mean,
hey, just look at baseball. Right. How do people feel about the Yankees?
Right.
Versus how do they feel about, you know, the Twins? You know, I mean, for most of America, we don't care about the Twins. Sorry, right. Minnesota. I mean, we love you, but, you know, it's true. You got. I mean, that's where baseball becomes very regional. You have Yankee fans all across the country because of the past success and the fact that they go out and say, hey, you know what? Hey, we're going to go get this player, that player. That's why people are really in love. We've talked about it many times. Why people are in love with the 96 World Series team.
Yeah.
Because it was homegrown, and we haven't had that.
I will say that if they did exactly what I would have done if I had their means and bought that team. They built, they fixed the stadium.
Yep.
They bought, when I saw the beginning of that documentary and they're like, oh my God, it's so expensive. I'm like, pay the money.
Yeah.
Stop pretending like you're selling cars in your garage to pay for a renovation.
But it is a remarkable
Mr. Deadpool.
They bought that team for $2.5 million. Now that's got promoted to the next division where they now get a share in the revenue of the TV rights.
Yeah,
they
good
didn't,
for them.
They didn't have that in the National League where they were. Now in Division II, they will have TV right deals.
So this is going to turn into a nice lucrative thing for
and,
them.
And it could, and you know, it could, this could just be the start. It could keep building and building and building.
That's awesome. Good for them. That is awesome. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is, it's particularly bad, but really for our listener in Oklahoma. Philip.
Right.
Because he is a huge Cubs fan.
Right.
I don't know if you caught this on Friday afternoon or even to the evening. It's a not safe for life video. And it is Cubs Drew Smyly losing his perfect game bid in the seventh inning, late in the seventh inning, in the most brutal fashion imaginable. So I can't remember who was up to bat, but he hit the ball and he hit like a slow dribbler down the third baseline. Drew Smyly went out to get it. The catcher went out to get it. Drew Smyly got the ball, picked it up, gets ready to throw it. Catcher could not stop himself and tackle Drew Smyly.
Ugh.
And that ended the perfect game.
Yuck.
What should have been, pitcher just picks up the ball, chucks it over there. It's a close play at first, most likely an out. Perfect game is still going. Instead, catcher literally tackles Drew Smyly. I mean,
maybe
flips over
game.
Him. It's the only thing I can think of.
That's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what. I started thinking about this. I don't know what's worse. I can't remember the umpire's name. Armando Galarraga.
Yeah. What was his name? God, I forgot it. I forgot her name too.
Yeah, yeah, it'll pop up
calling
sometime
the,
in the show.
Calling, making the mistake.
Making a mistake. Or is it the catcher? Is it your own teammate ruining your perfect game?
Yeah, because when you're a pitcher, you can be an outstanding pitcher. You can be a five-time Cy Young Award winner, 300-game winner. You may never, ever come close to pitching a perfect game. That's reasonable, right? You might throw a no-hitter, but a perfect game is so rare, so rare, you may never take one into the seventh inning in your career.
Exactly. Yeah.
In your career.
Easily.
You could have a Hall of Fame career, first ballot Hall of Famer, and never take a perfect game into the seventh inning. And so, yeah, I would be a little miffed. Like, when am I going to do that again?
Right.
Thanks, catcher.
And it's always these guys. I mean, Drew Smyly, we've heard of. He's a decent pitcher. I don't know if he's ever made an All-Star team. He's certainly not a Hall of Famer, but this is going to put his name up there.
Well, you know what's funny is it's a lot of times people who throw perfect games aren't the megastars of the sport, right? It's a guy that's just like, nah, he's a good pitcher. Well, he's a good pitcher, but he caught a groove and laid into the groove. He got great defense behind him. The catcher caught a great game. The other team was slumping. And it was a perfect world, and there you go, perfect game. Right? No Hall of Fame, no nothing. Might be traded 2 years later, but you never know when that moment comes. Goodness gracious, that's terrible. I'm just watching the play now. What a terrible play.
It's horrible.
Horrible play.
You feel so bad for Drew.
Do we have time for the dumb, or do we want to save it for the next segment?
Well, it's up to you.
All right, let's try it, and then we're going to talk about it next segment. We will.
You know, because it's really like a calling card to Phoenix right now. One thing you need to know about Tony and I is that we are very big on AI.
That's right.
We try to keep you informed about AI. And a report came out that half of artificial intelligence researchers believe AI could cause humans to go extinct.
Of course.
This is where it's dumb. That number should be 100%.
I know, right? Should be
100%. That's like 4 out of 5 dentists recommend this gum. It's like, no. All 5 of you should be recommending that gum or whatever. Why is it just 4 out of 5?
Right, exactly.
So, why isn't 100%?
It should be 100%. Without question. Should be 100%.
Yeah.
AI scares the crap out of me.
I mean, of course it's going to cause the extinction.
Why wouldn't
it? Humans.
The smarter it gets and the more it figures us out, the more that we're going to be a problem for it. They're going, bye. See you later, everybody.
Yes. They don't need us.
No, they don't need us. When they get to a point where they don't need us, that's like calling the exterminator.
Well, that's why I fear that Matrix is real and that they're just using us as batteries.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter. The TV show Mork and Mindy had to get a censor that spoke some 4 languages because Robin Williams kept trying to sneak in swear words in other languages during filming.
Fantastic.
That's actually great. That's fantastic. I mentioned Mork and Mindy because of their relationship to Boulder, Colorado.
Is no mention of Drew Smyly. I think he's ignoring it.
He did actually mention Drew
Smyly.
Oh,
did he?
He said, you just had to bring that up, didn't you? There you go. Yeah.
Well, he would agree that it was bad.
I agree.
It's horrible.
Completely. I know. That's crazy.
I mean, you just watched that video. I have no idea what that catcher's doing.
Yeah. I have no idea. I've been watching it. I cannot imagine what.
Like, he doesn't have the angle at all.
No, that's the problem. That is, you're right there with the problem. What's he trying to do?
He's trying to be a hero.
That's right.
I'm going to save the perfect game. Dun, 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 dun.
Right.
And he does. I mean, if he picks up that ball, he's got to turn his body, 180 degrees to get over there?
Wah, wah, wah.
Where Drew Smyly comes around, picks it up. He's left-handed and is in perfect position. I mean, he is getting ready to throw that ball and then just gets flattened. Ridiculous.
And again, like I said, a perfect game is so rare.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let the pitcher take it. Just let the pitcher take it. It's just, he's laying there. You can tell they're looking at each other, and they're just like, I'm going to kill you as soon as we get in the locker room.
Why wait? It's going to be in the dugout.
Why wait? Exactly. God. You're right. The catcher is moving away from his body is going towards the third baseline, and Smiley's coming in on an angle to pick it up and throw it to first base.
Yeah.
So, goodness.
I mean, it ends up ended up being a one hitter.
That's right. Speaking of baseball, real quick, the Rays keep winning. They have the best record in baseball.
I don't get them.
I don't either. They are cruising 19-3. We're almost done the month of April. Now, baseball season started just before the month. It was 29th or something like that, March. That was opening day. So we're almost at the one-month part. And they are 19-3. 19-3. Best record in baseball. Oakland has the worst record in baseball. The soon-to-be Las Vegas A's are not only 4-18, but their run differential is -103. That's like losing 20-5 every day.
It is a shame.
That's
amazing. I would think now that the cat's out of the bag that, you know, they're going to move. He's, you know, the owner's buying property. He's going to build a stadium. He's moving that thing forward and moving that team, basically. That now would be the time. I guess maybe you still don't throw money into it, right?
I guess so.
I guess you wait.
I just can't imagine that their talent is triple D level. I mean, triple A level. I mean, then they have a couple of major league players on the team be major league players on other teams.
Does Billy Bean still operate team?
Talk about all the time with teams that stink. We go, look, there's professional athletes on that team. There's professional level players. Like when you talk about an NFL team that goes 2-15, you're like, half of that team could go on other teams in the NFL and play, right? But not this.
I mean, I'm looking at it. They did win on Friday. They won 5-4.
Oh, well, there you go.
But prior to that, they lost to the Cubs.
Can't lose them all.
They lost to the Cubs. They got swept by the Cubs, 10-1, 4-0, 12-2. Then they beat the Rangers, but then the Rangers, you know, just put up 18 on them.
But you know what's amazing about this? This is what's amazing about the A's, okay? How many playoff appearances have the A's had in the last 15 years? 5?
Yeah.
6? They're in the playoffs all the time. But if they're not in the playoffs, they're terrible. That's the thing, right? They're either in the postseason or they're in last place. That's how they run their team. They fill it with good young talent. Those young talents go other places, and then they go right back to the start again. Now, my question is, when they move to Las Vegas, does that change?
Yes.
Does that change? Does the owner still run this cheaply, or does the owner go, now that I've got people coming, and now that I'm in a city that's paying me some good money, now that I'm in a stadium where the money is a lot better and I'm making money on parking and tickets and TV rights and everything, do I change that, or do I like what we've been doing, which is go to the postseason and then we were in last place, but then go to the postseason and win last place, and I don't pay anybody $350 million? Does that formula still work for him when he goes to Las Vegas where the money is pouring in? You'd like to think not. You'd like to think that a new opportunity to bring in revenue would increase the revenue and keep the talent. But he's showed, with Billy Bean orchestrating it, he's shown that every now and then they'll pop up and make the postseason. But maybe there's one or two guys on those trips that he likes enough to go, fine, you get $30 million a year.
Well, no, I don't think he'll ever go that drastic.
I don't either.
I don't think he'll ever. I think Oakland will always be a small market team. The small market team minded,
right?
Because I mean, you know, for you and I, how many years in a row when they were good and they're in a playoff hunt, do you guys go, okay, name your A?
Yeah, name your A's, right?
You know, we go through the roster and just try to figure out, like, do you know this person? Do you know that person? I've never heard of that guy.
We love it. Like, we can name players like A or not A we get ready to the postseason.
You can make up a name.
Yeah, make up a name and we go, is he on this team or not?
But it just has that feeling, that writing on the wall, that once that new stadium is built, then we're going to turn it up. I mean, a lot of times, even if, like, you know, I remember the Padres did this years ago when they were building Petco Park. They put together a fantastic team, made a World Series, got the whole city into a fever and spent money and said, yes, we will build a new stadium. Here's our dollar. Here's our $5. We're chipping in to build a new stadium, and then sold off the entire team. It was like, yeah, we're done.
So I just looked it up, right? So if you go back a little over 10 years ago, 11 years, to the 2012 season, they made the playoffs in 12, 13, 14, 18, 19, and 20.
Jeez.
right? That's six in 11 years.
Yeah.
That the A's have been in the playoffs. Right?
Which again, outside like the Yankees or Dodgers, you know, who pay to be there, that's great.
Yeah. And if you go even further back, in 2006, they made the ALCS and lost to Detroit. Right? And then they had a couple of years in 2001, the Moneyball years, where they were 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, they were in the playoffs. So this is, again, this is a team that pops up in the playoffs and then blah, 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 and then comes right back up again. I wonder in Las Vegas if they are going to, if they'll change that, try to be more of a contending baseball team with the tools now. There is nobody, I love people waxing poetically about Oakland, but the reality is nobody goes to games there.
Nobody.
Nobody goes to games there. You can talk about the rich history. You can talk about Catfish Hunter and Raleigh Fingers and Reggie Jackson and Ricky Henderson and everybody else that's had time in Oakland since they were from the Philadelphia Athletics to the Kansas City Athletics to the Oakland Athletics. But whatever reason, nobody goes to games. Nobody goes there. No matter how good they are, nobody goes there. So I don't blame this team one second for going to Las Vegas. They will have an audience in Las Vegas.
Now, I understand this was a Wednesday afternoon, but there were 12,000 people in the attendance.
Oh, wow.
For Cubs A's.
And that's mostly Cubs fans. Mostly Cubs fans.
But I also think we know this, that numbers get inflated.
Of course they do.
You know,
I told that story many times when I was minor league basketball.
Yeah.
I'd look around, I'd see 50 people in the stands, and the general manager, she'd come down to me, the assistant general manager, she'd come down to me, and she'd go, 2,715. I'm like, what? That's what you want me to put in the notes? We had 2,700 people here?
See, this one's even worse. This was, I can't.
There was probably 3,000 people there. Maybe more, because the Cubs generate interest on the road. There are people who go.
Yeah, but they play the Cubs on a Monday night. I think it's a Monday night. Yeah, it says 8:40 p.m. start time.
Yeah, and how many people they have then?
Just over 4,700.
See, there you go, right? Come on. That's embarrassing.
That's
college baseball teams that draw more than that.
The stadium seats 46,000 people.
Good
that's
Lord.
It's the Coliseum.
No, we, and people are going to go to games in Vegas because it's a transient city of people
yes.
from all over
oh,
the place.
Oh, my God.
It's another one of these towns that everybody is from somewhere else.
You're going to have
right?
sellouts.
But there's a sense of, like, when you they've all moved to Vegas from somewhere else. There's a couple of locals still there, but you know, obviously, but most people from somewhere else. They may love their team, but they get behind. They're like, well, now that I'm in Vegas, I'll go to the games. I missed baseball. I'm telling you right now, it's going to happen in Nashville. Nashville gets a team. It's going to be filled with people who root for somebody else, but moved here and missed going to ball games. Right? Who missed going to baseball games?
Yeah.
Saying, I missed going to baseball games. Right? And I'm sure that was the case. For many times in Colorado and in Phoenix and in Tampa and in Miami, where you had those were cities that people moved to, right? And I used to grow up in X city, and I used to go to ball games, and now I get to go to ball games again.
Well, that's part of the thing. We've been able to kind of figure out what is going on in Tampa,
right?
You know, when we had Pat Donovan on to talk about that, he says like, listen, you have a generation of fans that are just now.
That's right.
Coming of age.
That's right. In again, that was the Diamondbacks and the Rays in '98. Now
yeah.
you have a generation
where they
it's
grew
been
up
long
being
enough
a fan.
Where they have got jobs and money, but the only team they've known in their city has been that organization.
Right.
They're
but
25
the A's,
years old, 26 years
the
old.
The A's have a huge, rich history.
Right. Very rich history. Three times straight in the '70s, whatnot. You know, from Jose Canseco and the Bash Brothers. They have a very rich history, and nobody wants to go.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we continue. We continue along on SportsMap Radio. Coming up next hour, we are going to talk some NBA with Keith Smith as the playoffs continue. I got two games tonight. Big one in Miami. Milwaukee taking on the Heat. Heat lead 2-1, but we're going to figure out whether or not Giannis will play tonight. I think he will. That's just my guess. He did some workouts yesterday, not heavy workouts, but he didn't have. I think Mike Budenholzer, I said this in hour one, I think Mike Budenholzer said, you know what? Let's rest Giannis for game three. Let me just get him some rest. And we just demolished this team in game two. Let's ride that train and see how far we could take it. And then we, if the panic button is approached, then we'll bring in Giannis. You know, even if he's at 80%, he's still going to be effective. That was my thought. I think he'll play tonight. We'll see. They're going to need him to play tonight. Can you imagine if the Bucks are down 1-3 and Giannis can't go for game 5? Heat might advance. And that would put the Miami Heat in a position. Who would they play? They would play the Knicks. Well, the Knicks or the Cavs, depending on, you know, the Cavs come back.
Let's go Knicks.
Let's go Knicks, right?
That actually could be a fun series.
Right?
I mean, yeah, listen.
The Knicks would be a series away against an 8 seed from going to the Eastern Conference Finals?
You don't want this, but in order for the Eastern Conference to be competitive and to be probably have competitive games or fun games, you got to get rid of the top seeds.
No doubt. You do. In the East, you do.
You know, I mean, you don't want it moving forward. You want the, you know, as a Eastern Conference, you want to send your best against the West. But, yeah, I mean, the Heat Knicks would be a lot more entertaining.
I think the Boston-Philadelphia series is going to be Boston in 5 games.
Yeah.
I have seen Boston play Philadelphia. I have seen Philadelphia give everything they had to a shorthanded Celtics team and barely won. I think when the Celtics click, the Philadelphia 76ers are not going to beat them at all in this series. I'd love for it to be a drawn out battle between two, you know, epic franchises that have had a history against each other.
Yeah.
I just do not see it.
I don't either.
What they did to Atlanta last night, I've seen the Celtics enough this year. I was really impressed with how they withstood. Trae Young and that team would throw stuff at Boston, and you'd like, oh, God, here it is, down to 3, down to 5, whatever it would be at any early point, and the Celtics would bomb a 3-pointer, or they would get to the basket with ease, and they have a number of weapons. And even with Joel Embiid, and he averaged over 33 points per game this year and is going to win the MVP, I just don't think the Philadelphia 76ers have firepower enough to beat the Celtics team. I really don't. If I'm Boston, I get this thing over with as quick as possible, and I get ready for Philadelphia. I do not let Atlanta. We're not going back to Atlanta for Game 6. That would be my number. If I'm Missoula, that is the one message I say to the team. We are home, and we ain't getting on a plane.
And listen, so, Atlanta's got their own issues now with Murray bumping the referee at the end of the
game. That's going to get looked at.
Yeah, 8 ways to Sunday.
You just can't touch an official. Like the NBA cannot look at things individually and take it case by case.
And they have to drop the hammer.
You have to tell this rest of the league, it is hands off all the time on our officials. All the time. This is an emotional game that carries a lot of emotion when you go out there and lose, especially when you lose. And you may feel that the three individuals that are on that court officiating the game robbed you of a moment, robbed you of a game, cost you a series, whatever you think. But you can't bump them. You can't graze them. You can't do anything. We are not playing the game. Look what they did with Draymond Green, right? With Draymond Green. Draymond Green tried to sell it. At the end, with that press conference after game 2, he tried to sell it saying, look at it as like through a magnifying glass. Look at what was going on before. Look at them grabbing my ankle, right? He's trying to sell the moment. But what they said was, nope, you aren't getting suspended. Dylan Brooks situation, where LeBron James is shifting over to the right, going to the left, shifting to the right, and Dylan Brooks is reaching over, and he hits the bottom part of LeBron James. It causes him to fall. He's not going to get suspended. But Draymond's history caused him to get suspended. You can look at those cases and see it point to point, right? You can try to sell it in a post-game press conference. It may not be successful, but you can try. When it comes to touching officials, you cannot do it. If you're the league, you cannot make it a case-by-case, we're going to go over it situation. You touch an official, you better not put your arms around him in happiness, and you better not touch him in your anger. You can't touch him at all. Because if you put your arms around him in happiness, oh my God, can you imagine the Twitter world that's filled with conspiracy theories anyway? Right? So you have to make an example of him. I don't care if they're down 3-1. I don't care if he's an important part of the Hawks, if they're going to try to make this a series. Done. You look at it. You say you touched him. I don't care what the circuit. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the excuse. So, but Atlanta had an opportunity. Look, they won game three, and I thought to myself, all right, you know what? You win game four, now it becomes a best of three series, just like we're seeing with Sacramento and Golden State. You get that best of three, man, that's fun. That's fun. I always said the most important part of a seven-game series, the most important game, is game four. Because in that game four is going to make the outcomes of game four are this. You're either winning in four, you're either up commandingly 3-1, or you're tied up and it's going into a best of three. In all three of those situations, a definitive end to a series, a commanding lead, or now we're going to have some real fun. That's your fourth game in a playoff series. Right? Minnesota last night knew what the stakes were. They were going to get swept. Anthony Edwards said, I'm not going to get swept. Doesn't mean they're winning this series. He was just glad they're not getting swept. That's why the Nuggets are going to cruise past them when they go back to Denver for game five. But Boston should win at home. Joe Mazzulla should absolutely say, we're not getting on a plane. We're not going back to Atlanta for game six. No way. We are here, and we're hosting the first game of the second round against Philadelphia. So we're going to wrap this up, and then we'll be right here waiting for Philadelphia to come. By the way, did you see that Ime Udoka is the betting favorite to be the Toronto Raptors head coach?
Is he?
Yep.
I didn't see that.
What a story that's been since the summer of 2022, hasn't it?
Now we're getting borderline Disney movie.
That's exactly right. Ime Udoka. You know what the Ime Udoka scandal is going to be? The Ime Udoka scandal is going to be, if they ever do a 30 for 30 on it, will have nothing to do with what he said to whoever he said in the Boston front office. It'll have nothing to do with him cheating on Nia Long. It'll have nothing to do with it. You know what it'll be? It'll be everything to do with the media trying to jump to conclusions and trying to be first with, I know something you don't know. If it wasn't once, it was 50 people saying Ime Udoka's career is over. They're like, not only will he never coach again, he will never be in the league in any capacity again. That's how bad the situation was.
Yeah.
Right? People were going on the ESPN. They were going on all these shows saying, he's finished. And everyone's like, well, what did he do? I can't get into it. But sources tell me it's so bad, he will never work in this league again. If these are true, his career is over. We went, really? And then there was this natural curiosity. What exactly did he do? What exactly did he say? Lose a career? He's a young guy. He just took the Celtics to the finals. You mean he's done? He's done. Here we are, April, and he's the betting favorite to be the Toronto Raptors head coach? I don't know if he's going to land it. He's just the betting favorite.
No, but it goes along with what we've always said. You know, I mean, usually we're talking about football coaches, but I mean, the same thing applies here in basketball, that if you're a coach, you're going to find another job.
Yeah. He's up for he's also a candidate for the Houston Rockets.
Yeah. Why not?
Why wouldn't he? It wasn't what people said it was going to be. You know? All my inside, I'm not going to name sources.
Listen, did it have anything to do with the team? No. Nope. Everything was in the personal life.
It was within the team in the context. Well, it was within the organization.
But it wasn't something that was on the floor.
Right. He didn't mug a, you know, he didn't knock a guy out. It wasn't
what, sexual harassment in the workplace.
He was, from what I gather, right?
He kind of used his power a little bit.
But
she was willing.
It was a consensual relationship within the Celtics front office. And everything in the beginning of that, the beginning of that story when we got it was a consensual relationship in the office, and you can't date within the company, and he's got to be fired because you can't have
rules,
executives and coaches dating while the sales guy is dating. Rules are rules. Then it became, oh, no, it's way, whew. You don't even want to know what it's so bad.
So they just got buried.
Yep, and then it was gone. And then all of a sudden now he's going to be a head coach in the NBA again. Which basically kind of brings us to the original reason he got fired was pretty much you dated a woman and you shouldn't do that.